So I'm going to start out with a little litany that I hope you feel energized by. Rules, laws, guidance, commandments, suggestions, dictates, acts, ordinances, statutes, commands, decrees, directions, directives, edicts, fiats, instructions, orders, axioms, maxims, precepts, morals, principles, values, bans, interdictions, prohibitions, proscriptions, restrictions, conventions, customs, habits, manners, mores, practices, traditions, ways, guidelines, guides, standards, etc., etc., etc. Thank you, Merriam-Webster's, for all those words related to rules. I'm certain there's more that we could come up with and think about. So as we begin this morning's talk, I ask for your consideration, or bring forward for your consideration, this observation from the Christian and Jewish tradition. The first time that God speaks to any human being, the divine speech is in the form of a rule. Now, this first rule appears in the Garden of Eden, found in Genesis chapter 2 from both the Torah and the Holy Bible. It reads as follows in the translations from the KJV, the King James Version. Quote, "And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it. For in the day that thou shalt eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die." We're not even 1,200 words into the holy text, just after the first 1,000 words, where the creator of the universe created heaven and earth and all the fishes and the birds and the beasts. And the very first words that human being number one hears from their creator immediately after a generous invitation to freely eat of every tree is a rule punishable by death, linked by the conjunction but. Now, according to the Cambridge Dictionary, but is used to introduce an added statement, usually something that is very different from what was said before. And indeed, a rule punishable by death is incredibly different, distinctly different from a generous invitation to eat freely of every tree. Now, I think it's notable that the first divine invitation, the first divine rule are linked together in the same breath by the conjunction but. Now, in Exodus, the next chapter of the Torah in the Holy Bible, there's more divine speech in the form of rules. There's the canonical Ten Commandments, most of which are constructed in the form of thou shalt not. Thou shalt not kill, steal, commit adultery, lie, covet, etc. Now, as Moses receives these commandments on Mount Sinai, the people at the base of the mountain, quote, saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when people saw it, they removed and stood afar off. You know, such is the thundering power of divine commandments, of divine rulemaking. And I realize what a risk it is to speak about the Hebrew scriptures and early chapters of the Bible in a Unitarian Universalist congregation. But even with those doubts, even if you're an incredibly devout atheist who has dismissed all sacred and religious texts as merely creative manipulation composed by human beings to consolidate political power, it is notable that God's voice delivering rules goes a long way in explaining, from a literary critical perspective, our human love and our human longing for rules. We humans love rules. We want to know the rules. And as the first man and the first woman so profoundly pointed out, and they proved when they transgressed the only rule of Eden, it was just one rule, don't eat from that tree, of the knowledge of good and evil, we also love to know the rules so we can rub up against them, so we can bend them, so we can break them, So we, yeah. For those of you watching at home, there was a very enthusiastic, yeah, to the phrase, bend and break the rules. So we bend and break the rules even when God commands them, and perhaps especially so. And with that, a story. I've got this friend who lives in the United States. When he was a teenager, he became incredibly fascinated with Australia, the so-called land down under. He would stare at maps, he would stare at the globe, and he dreamed of one day traveling to that continent to see the place with his own eyes. In college, he trained as a scientist. He was a geologist, and visiting Australia became this ever more intense dream. He was strongly driven to visit Australia. So after graduation, he set this goal that he was going to save his money, and after a few years, he was going to go to Australia. And sure enough, he did. On one of his idiosyncratic pilgrimages, he bought one of those planes. I don't know if you can still buy them today. One of those planes that you could go in one direction and have multiple stops along the way. And so he did this island hopping on the way down to Australia, eventually landed in Sydney, bought a used car, began driving all over the place, feeling the vastness of the country, seeing the landscape that he had been studying and dreaming about for so, so long. He had waited and worked so long to get here. He studied, he saved, he knew everything about Australia. He was in his element. He was that proverbial, how shall we say it, geologist kid in the rock candy store, right? As he says, he drove for over 24 hours to visit Australia's most iconic site, which is the sacred rock of Uluru. And so he was standing in the central Australian desert, awestruck by the magnitude and the majesty of the rock, the fearsome powers of nature, those natural forces, and the vastness of geologic time. And he knew, as a scientist, that there were explanations for everything that he was seeing. And yet, watching and witnessing this sacred rock, Uluru, watching it in dawn, watching it midday, watching it in the dusk, watching it under stars, he noted that every picture he had ever seen of this sacred rock was pale and puny in comparison to what he was standing in front of. This was a place to feel immensity, to have his human frame feel incredibly small, to feel incredibly time-defined, and most importantly, to feel blessed to be here. Now, even as a scientist, one who was trained to explore and experiment and explain, he respected that the indigenous word Uluru meant meeting place of reality and dreams. I love that. I like to think of every Unitarian Universalist sanctuary as the meeting place of reality and dreams. And so with reality and dreams in mind, he set off for another particular stretch of coastline that was on his must-see list. There was this rock formation of limestone stacks on the coast of the Indian Ocean called the 12 Apostles, even though there were only 8 stacks. And again, he drove umpteen hours, parked his grimy car in this small lot, gathered his hiking gear together, and set off, only to arrive at the trailhead with a chain spanning the entry point and the sign wired to the chain in all capital letters, "Trail Closed." The sign was painted by a human being. Was approximately 1 million miles away from his boyhood home where he had first started studying Australian maps. 2 simple words, impossible, impossible to misinterpret. Trail closed. Now what? He stared hard at that sign. You know how sometimes when you stare at something, the or a sign, the letters start to get wiggly and jiggly. Well, these letters started to get wiggly and jiggly for him, and they started to rearrange themselves. And the new sign in his mind, same exact letters, read, "Coldest liar." So, it's true. So this rearrangement, you can check it at home. This rearrangement, perhaps, was another sign. A coldest liar is the one who is saying that the trail was closed. So my friend looked around. He was the only car in the parking lot. He figured there was not another human being for miles. 2, 5, 10, 150, who cares? While falling far short of Eden's tree of knowledge of good and evil or the thundering and smoking of Mount Sinai, he knew that the trail closed sign was not affixed to that chain by God. And even if it were, he pretended not to read English. So he set out along the trail, and he was pleased to not be thwarted by a cold liar. Now his senses were alert to possible dangers, which heightened the experience. And like his time in Uluru, the scientist in him marveled at the rocks and the forces of nature, and with his safe passage, he just wondered why was this trail closed in the first place? He saw no reason for it being closed, and he was exceedingly pleased by his decision to continue along his way. Now, it's not that someone didn't have a reason at some point in time, perhaps even a good reason, but the fact is he disobeyed the sign, the rule, and he fulfilled his boyhood dream. Now, 30 years later, he told me this story, and he mentioned that he's using this story in a family setting to teach his daughters an essential lesson about rules, that you need to think of why a rule may exist. And he said that if his wife and his daughters saw the sign, they would have not gone down the trail. They would have not gone down the trail like he did. They would have figured that the sign was there for a good reason, and they would have altered their plans. They would have enjoyed a nice picnic nearby and then headed off for another adventure somewhere else, respecting the dictates of the sign. Now, the story can serve as an incredibly instructive one about the varying responses to rules. So for my friend, who had worked so long and so hard, who had traveled halfway around the world to get there, the trail closed sign was unwelcome news. And he just asked himself, why? Why is this trail closed? Now, if nothing else, he headed down the trail to discover why, the rule was there in the first place. Now, a traveler encountering the energetics of a warning sign and trying to find out for themselves why is a metaphor that all explorers, all scientists, all artists understand. They all bump up against rules. They all bump up against people telling them what to do and what not to do. Yeah, right. And the world's enmeshed in millions and millions of rules, from essential to arbitrary. And it can be healthy and sometimes incredibly fulfilling to sometimes question them or to bend them or to willfully break them. And of course, it's your job also to be incredibly mindful that there may be consequences, natural and otherwise, that you take responsibility when you transgress the rule. And my friend, moving past the trail closed sign, it reminds me of this beautiful poem by Antonio Machado. This is number 29 from Proverbs and Songs. Walker, your footsteps are the road and nothing more. Walker, there is no road. The road is made by walking. Walking, you make the road. And turning to look behind, you see the path you never again will step upon. Walker, there is no road, only foam trails on the sea. So when my friend headed down the trail to discover why it was closed, he may have discovered a rock slide, a nest of vipers, or some other impassable obstacle, but he didn't. He followed the trail to a stunning viewpoint and watched the 12 apostles, even though there were only 8, watch the waves of the Indian Ocean. And as I mentioned, he's using this story, this very personal story, to try and teach his daughters about rules that, while useful and necessary, and sometimes even divine, we also need to be interpreted by human intelligence, your human intelligence in particular, applied to very specific situations, and one need not strictly follow each and every rule. Now, while the universe of rules can be seen as black and white, there is also plenty of misty gray, wherein we need to discriminate and to make judgment calls as to whether whether this rule or that rule is worthy of our attention and worthy of our respect. His daughters will have none of it. The sign is the sign is the sign, and rearranging the letters to compose coldest liar is a flight of arrogant fancy. You don't go past the sign for good reason. And I, of course, took the opportunity to share my own very short story with him. My twin daughters were really little, and they were early readers. We visited a beach on Lake Erie to go swimming. We were the only ones around. There was a sign that I ignored, hoped that they wouldn't notice. But one of my daughters slowly read out loud, "Swimming prohibited without lifeguard present." "Papa, we can't swim here. There's no lifeguard." I explained that I was a certified lifeguard when I was 16 years old. I was very present here at the beach, so we are okay to swim. I thought the logic was irrefutable. She would have none of it. She played in the sand. Her twin sister played in the water. We all survived. All parties interpreted the rules as they saw fit. They made their decisions. Had the authorities arrived, I would have pleaded my case about being a lifeguard. And I'm sure that everybody here, and I encourage you to think about it and talk about it at coffee hour, has their own story about rubbing up against, bumping into, coming to the borderline, perhaps crossing a rule or a law or a dictate, and feeling the energetics and needing to decide your course of action. Now, following all rules at all times is certainly one way to be in the world. I see you, Grandma Grum. Interpreting the rules and making judgment calls is quite another. Now, willfully breaking rules for your own pleasure, for your own gain, and for your own amusement is yet a third. A former girlfriend of mine, we're no longer together, many years ago, after we were long not a couple, she told me that she had broken each and every 10 commandment by the time that she was 30. Now, she claimed that she did not set out to break them, but upon reflection, discovered that she had transgressed all these holy laws, and to do so was either easy or necessary or some combination of both, with thou shalt not kill falling into the necessary category, and thou shalt not commit adultery falling into the very, very easy category. So welcome to a discriminating intelligence and an explorer's willingness to face the energetics of a trail closed sign. And while researching for this sermon, one of my favorite research methods is to talk with people. I'll have a topic and I'll say, "Hey, how's it going?" See somebody out and about and just ask them a pointed question about whatever sermon I'm thinking about. I'm currently thinking about responsibility. So if you've got some good stories about responsibility, please talk to me. When I was researching for this sermon, one of my favorite moments was talking with an elderly friend of mine. He recently survived a near fatal bout of sepsis, and he is absolutely delighted to be alive. And he literally savors each and every blessed day. I drive around town, I see him outside, and he's like, "Oh I get so happy when I see him. His brush with death, like anybody's brush with death, is going to heighten your awareness that time is short and love is precious. I love the fact that our new considered constellation of our religious institution, that the centerpiece is love. I think that's a fantastic sun around which every planet can orbit. This man, this person who survived, this elder, is reteaching himself how to walk. And I found him pushing a walker, big smile on his face, pushing a walker in front of the public library. And I stopped him, Carl, how's it going, Carl? And I asked him about his relationship with rules. And he goes, rules. He goes, if there was a rule against breathing, my wife would be dead. And he said, me? I'd keep breathing. And so with breathing in mind, let's close with a time travel visit back to paradise. This is one of the great gifts of our human imagination. We can imagine this. So we are going back to paradise. We are going back to the Garden of Eden. And so let's join our deepest ancestors as they gaze upon the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Here we are. And I can see a tree back there. It's very interesting. There's a tree painted at the back of the church there. And Eden is everything the travel brochure said it was going to be. It is perfect in every way. Adam and Eve, they give us the naked garden tour. Eventually, we arrive at that special tree, the tree that God warned us about. A human hand reaches out, plucks a piece of that fruit, gorgeous fruit. And in a spirit of generosity, that hand offers you the fruit. And you are hungry from this long trip. And truth be told, you are more than a little curious about the taste. And knowing what you do about the consequences as well as the intensity of human consciousness, the intensity of needing to make choices, the intensity of responsibility, you take the fruit into your hand and you Amen.